Welcome, fellow explorers of knowledge, to the Deep Dive. Just pause for a moment and think about the last time you streamed a video, maybe navigated with your phone, or simply sent a quick message. That seamless connection, that sort of invisible thread that links us all, it feels almost magical, doesn't it? But have you ever stopped to truly consider the silent physical infrastructure tirelessly working behind the scenes, you know, making all that possible? Today, we're embarking on a deep dive into one of the, well, unsung architects of our digital world, SBA Communications Corp, or SBAC. Our mission is to peel back the layers and explore how this company, a really foundational player in the wireless tower industry, not only operates and thrives, but strategically navigates the complex demands of an ever more connected planet. We've meticulously combed through the latest investment analyses, detailed financial reports, and insightful industry comparisons to give you a comprehensive shortcut to understanding this vital yet often overlooked sector. By the end of our conversation, you won't just understand the mechanics of a unique business model. I promise you, you'll unlock some genuine aha moments about the fundamental forces shaping our digital economy, forces that are literally building the future. And who knows, you might even identify some truly compelling, overlooked opportunities along the way.
It's true. We all carry these powerful devices, you know, in our pockets. Yet we rarely give a second thought to the towers and antennas that are literally relaying every bit of data. This deep dive isn't just about one company. It's about understanding the essential real estate of our digital lives and why that physical backbone is more crucial than ever before.
Okay, let's unpack this then. When we talk about SBA Communications, we're really talking about the physical backbone of our entire wireless world. At its core, SBSE is an independent owner and operator of wireless communications infrastructure. They've been at this since, what, 1989? And a key point for investors is that since 2016, they've been structured as a real estate investment trust, a REIT.
Mm-hmm. That REIT structure is important for tax purposes and how they return capital.
Right. And their primary business seems straightforward. They lease space on their huge portfolio of towers, buildings, rooftops, other sites.
Pretty much anywhere you can stick an antenna.
And this isn't just a U.S. thing. They operate across the Americas and Africa, too. So how does this core business model actually work on a day-to-day level?
Right. So to truly grasp SBAC's operations, you need to look at its two distinct but intimately linked business segments. The first, and by far the dominant one, is site leasing.
Site leasing.
It's like the absolute heart of SBAC's business. It contributed over 97% of its segment operating profit in 2023.
97%.
Wow.
Yes, huge. Think of it like being a digital landlord. SBAC owns these communication sites, the towers, rooftops, you name it, and then leases antenna space on them to major wireless service providers.
Like AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile.
The big guys.
Exactly. The big guys. Yeah. SBAC provides the essential physical structure, the passive infrastructure, for these carriers to mount their active network equipment. And the financial characteristics of this site leasing segment are, well, exceptionally attractive.
How so? What makes them so attractive?
We're talking about revenue derived from long-term contracts. Hmm. Typically, these span 5 to 15 years.
Okay, so long-term visibility.
Definitely. And often with options for multiple renewals by the tenant. But here's where it gets particularly compelling.
Mm-hmm.
These leases almost universally include contractual rent escalators.
Meaning the rent goes up automatically.
Precisely. In the U.S., these are typically fixed annual increases around 3%. Internationally, they're often tied to local inflation indices.
So built-in growth and inflation protection.
Exactly. Host, this creates a highly predictable, recurring, and importantly, growing stream of high-margin revenue. It's remarkably resilient, even during inflationary periods. And because this infrastructure is so absolutely mission-critical to the carriers, I mean, their business depends on it.
They can't just pick up and leave.
Right. Customer churn is incredibly low. The only real exception is during major carrier consolidations, which we can definitely talk about later.
Okay.
So the aha moment here is that SBAC isn't just collecting rent. They're collecting guaranteed inflation-protected rent on indispensable digital real estate. That provides a foundation of incredible stability and predictable growth. It's like having a tenant whose rent automatically goes up every year, guaranteeing a consistent raise without you really lifting a finger.
That guaranteed inflation-protected rent really paints a clear picture of the leasing side. It sounds incredibly stable. But you mentioned two segments. So if site leasing is the steady, reliable income stream, what's the other side? Site development. How does that fit into the overall strategy?
Right. The other side is site development. This segment offers project-based services to carriers for their network expansion and upgrades.
So helping them build out their networks.
Exactly. Think of it as the sort of construction and planning arm. The services include things like identifying potential sites, navigating the notoriously complex world of zoning and permitting.
Oh, yeah, that can be a nightmare.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then managing the actual construction. Oh. Now, unlike the consistent recurring nature of site leasing, site development is far more cyclical and frankly, volatile.
Okay, so less predictable.
Much less predictable. Its performance directly mirrors the capital expenditure cycles of the wireless carriers. For example, its revenue saw a significant decline from $297 million in 2022 down to $195 million in 2023.
Big drop. Why was that?
Largely because major carriers were moderating their spending after some really heavy 5G buildouts. They just pulled back a bit. However, and this is important, despite its smaller contribution to overall profit, this segment is strategically invaluable.
How so? If it's volatile and lower margin?
Because it provides SBAC with critical on-the-ground intelligence about carrier network plans, often long before they become public knowledge.
Ah, so it's like an inside track.
Kind of, yeah. This operational intimacy creates a synergistic feedback loop. It allows SBAC to identify and acquire prime locations for its own new tower builds, or to anticipate where existing towers will see new leasing activity from those carriers.
Makes sense. They know where the demand is heading.
Exactly. So while it's a lower margin, more volatile part of the business, it gives SBAC an important competitive edge. It offers crucial foresight into where the next digital highways need to be built and expanded. It's their eyes and ears on the ground, so to speak.
You called this whole setup an economic fortress earlier, and that really resonates. What specific elements make this kind of infrastructure business so uniquely defensible compared to, say, traditional commercial real estate?
Yeah.
What are the key battlements, if you will, that protect SBAC and companies like it?
That's a fantastic way to frame it, host. The fortress analogy is really quite perfect because the wireless tower industry operates on an incredibly powerful and defensible economic model. There are two primary battlements, as you put it, the power of co-location and these formidable barriers to entry.
Okay, let's start with co-location. What does that mean exactly?
Right. The fundamental economic driver for a tower REIT is its ability to host multiple tenants on a single tower. This demonstrates exceptionally high operating leverage. Let's look at the numbers to see how powerful this actually is.
Okay.
The initial capital expenditure to construct a tower is significant. We're talking typically around $275,000.
Not cheap.
Not at all. And with just one tenant, the return on investment, the ROI, is actually pretty modest. It yields about a 3% ROI, with gross margins of roughly 40%. But here's the real kicker, the aha moment. The economics transform dramatically with each additional tenant.
Because the tower's already built.
Precisely. The incremental cost to add a second or third tenant's equipment is minimal. It's mostly administrative stuff, maybe minor structural reinforcement, a bit more power consumption.
So the extra rent is almost pure profit.
Very close to it. Almost all the revenue from those additional tenants flows straight to the bottom line. Adding a second tenant can boost that ROI from 3% to a staggering 13%.
Wow. Big jump.
Huge jump. And a third tenant pushes it to a remarkable 24%, with gross margins expanding to over 80%.
Over 80% margins.
Think about that. Just adding that second tenant more than quadruples the return on the initial investment. This isn't just incremental growth. It's an economic superpower. It really shows how profoundly valuable that initial hard-won piece of infrastructure becomes when you can layer multiple essential services onto it. It's a principle you see in lots of successful platform businesses, not just towers.
That makes sense.
And as of the end of 2023, SBAC's portfolio had an average of about 1.9 tenants per tower.
So still room to grow on existing towers.
Absolutely. It indicates a substantial embedded capacity for future high-margin organic growth without needing significant additional capital investment. It's a powerful built-in growth mechanism right there.
Wow. Okay, so the real insight here isn't just about building towers. It's about the incredible leverage you get from a multi-tenant fixed cost asset. That's a fundamental lesson for any investor looking at infrastructure, really. But what stops someone else from just, you know, building their own towers and getting in on this lucrative business? What are those formidable barriers to entry you mentioned?
That's exactly where the fortress truly gets its high walls. These barriers are significant and, importantly, very durable. They effectively limit new competition and protect the incumbents like SBAC. Firstly, there's capital intensity. just the sheer amount of capital required to build a competing national portfolio of thousands of towers is, well, it's prohibitive.
Billions, right?
Tens of billions, easily. Consider that wireless carriers themselves spend tens of billions annually just on network upgrades. Building the passive infrastructure on top of that is an astronomical undertaking for a newcomer. It's almost impossible for a new player to achieve the necessary scale to compete effectively. Secondly, we have regulatory and zoning hurdles. This is a big one.
Yeah, I can imagine getting permits isn't easy.
It's not just about money. It's a complex and lengthy regulatory endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Obtaining site acquisition rights, navigating local zoning approvals, securing environmental permits. It's notoriously difficult and time-consuming. It often takes 18 to 24 months per site.
A year and a half to 2 years. For one tower.
Yep. And new tower proposals frequently face significant community opposition. People worry about aesthetics or sometimes perceived health concerns, even if they're unfounded scientifically. This regulatory moat makes rapid, large-scale network builds by new entrants practically unfeasible. And lastly, the scale and incumbency advantage of the big three, that's Marin Tower, Crown Castle, and SBA Communications, is just immense. It's irreplaceable, really.
They've been around a while.
Decades. They spent decades assembling these vast portfolios, covering the vast majority of the U.S. population. This incumbency not only gives them significant pricing power, but also deep, long-standing relationships with the major wireless carriers, which further cements their position. These barriers truly protect the incumbents. They create a stable, almost oligopolistic market that's incredibly hard for anyone new to disrupt.
So it sounds like the carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, they're almost inextricably linked to these tower companies. Is it fair to say there's a kind of mutually beneficial, maybe even symbiotic relationship at play here?
Oh, it's more than fair. It's absolutely essential. It's a truly symbiotic carrier relationship. Tower companies like SBC provide the essential passive infrastructure, basically. The real estate, the steel tower on which carriers mount their active network equipment, like the antennas and radios that actually transmit the signals.
Okay, passive versus active, got it.
This arrangement allows carriers to deploy and expand their networks with far less upfront capital expenditure than if they had to build and own every single tower themselves.
Which would be hugely expensive.
Massively. By outsourcing this passive infrastructure, carriers can focus their immense capital budgets on other critical things, like acquiring valuable spectrum licenses, which are incredibly expensive, and purchasing the latest cutting-edge network technology. In fact, over the past couple of decades, carriers themselves have systematically sold off their tower portfolios to REITs like SBC.
Really? Why would they do that?
To raise capital for their core network investments. They saw the value in shedding this capital-intensive asset and letting specialists like SBC manage it. And this dynamic creates a fascinating sort of counter-cyclical resilience for tower REITs.
How does that work?
Well, paradoxically, the more capital-constrained carriers become, especially during intense multi-year investment cycles like the current 5G build-out, the more reliant they become on tower companies.
Because they need to save their cash for the expensive radios and the spectrum.
Exactly. This need to conserve capital for active network gear just solidifies the REIT's role as the indispensable landlords of the wireless industry. It's a strategic partnership that benefits both sides, absolutely, but it particularly entrenches the tower companies in the ecosystem.
It's clear that SBAC operates within an incredibly strong economic model built on those defensive moats we talked about, but it's also underpinned by one of the most powerful and enduring secular trends of the modern economy, the just exponential growth in demand for mobile data. This isn't just about faster speeds anymore, right? It's about an entirely new digital landscape emerging and continuously evolving. What are the key drivers propelling this demand and, by extension, SBC's growth?
You're absolutely right, host. It's a relentless force. This demand is driven by several interconnected factors, and probably the most significant near to medium term catalyst is the 5G investment cycle.
Right, 5G. We hear about it all the time.
Yeah. And the global multi-year transition from 4G to 5G is far more than just a speed upgrade. It enables three really critical advancements. There's EMB, enhanced mobile broadband. That's how we get those blazing fast speeds for downloading movies in seconds.
Okay.
Then there's URLLC, ultra-reliable, low-latency communication. This is absolutely critical for things like autonomous vehicles or remote surgery, where even a millisecond of delay could have huge consequences.
Yeah, you can't have lag there.
Definitely not. And third is MMTC, massive machine-type communications. That's the backbone for the vast Internet of Things, connecting billions and billions of sensors. Now, to deliver on these promises, carriers have to undertake two critical network initiatives that directly benefit tower owners like SBAC.
Okay, what are those?
First, there are equipment upgrades. Carriers need to add new antennas and radios to their existing towers. Why? To broadcast signals on newly acquired mid-band spectrum, like C-band.
C-band. That's key for 5G performance, right?
So it's sort of the Goldilocks zone for 5G, offering a great balance of speed and range. And each of these equipment additions typically triggers a lease amendment with a tower owner.
So more equipment means more rent for SBAC.
Exactly. Incremental, high-margin revenue. Secondly, we're seeing network densification.
Meaning more towers closer together.
Essentially, yes. Higher frequency 5G waves, the ones that give you super fast speeds, travel shorter distances than 4G signals. They're also more susceptible to obstacles like buildings or even leaves on trees.
Oh, okay.
So to maintain seamless coverage and provide the necessary capacity, mm-hmm. especially in populated areas, carriers must build a denser network. That means more cell sites, both traditional macro towers and smaller localized small cells. This drives demand for new leases and new tower construction. So the aha here is that 5G isn't a one-and-done upgrade. It's a continuous, multi-year investment cycle.
A continuous revenue stream for companies like SBAC.
Precisely, for years to come.
And it's not just the carriers driving this, right? Our own personal usage habits play a huge, almost insatiable role. I mean, who isn't glued to their phone constantly these days?
Absolutely. The 5G upgrade cycle is, in many ways, a direct and necessary response to the exponential data consumption growth we're all contributing to. Global mobile data traffic just continues to grow at a relentless pace. It's fueled by, well, smartphone proliferation. Almost everyone has one now. And our ever-increasing appetite for data-intensive applications.
That's video streaming.
Exactly. Here's a striking fact that might make you pause. Video streaming now accounts for over 65% of all mobile data traffic.
65%? That's incredible.
And that figure is continually pushed upward by higher resolution content, 4K video, the explosion of short-form video on platforms like TikTok and Instagram Reels, mobile gaming, cloud-based apps. It all adds up. Our insatiable demand for more data, higher quality, and instant access literally forces carriers to continually invest in network capacity.
They have to keep up, otherwise the network slows down.
Right. They need to avoid congestion and maintain service quality. And that directly benefits tower owners like SBAC. It's this self-perpetuating cycle of demand and infrastructure build-out. And looking beyond just current trends, there's a whole new wave of emerging technologies that promises to accelerate data demand even further.
Like what? What's on the horizon?
Think about the Internet of Things, or IoT. It's projected to connect literally billions of sensors in homes, cities, factories, all generating and consuming data. Then you have private 5G networks rapidly being deployed in industrial settings.
For factories and businesses.
Yes, to enable things like automation, real-time analytics, secure communication for mission-critical applications. Then there's edge computing.
Processing data closer to the user.
Exactly. To reduce latency and improve responsiveness, this will require compute resources located at or very near cell towers, creating new revenue opportunities for companies like SBAC. They actually have an initiative called SBA Edge, focused on this, placing compute resources right at their tower bases.
Interesting.
And looking even further ahead, future applications like fully autonomous vehicles, highly immersive augmented reality, AR, sophisticated virtual reality, VR experiences.
Things that need instant connection.
They will demand ubiquitous, high capacity, and ultra low latency connectivity. That means an even denser network of terrestrial infrastructure is needed. The future of technology, quite literally, is wired into companies like SBAC.
That paints a picture of just massive, sustained growth potential. But what does this all mean for SBAC specifically within this crucial landscape?
Yeah.
We know it's an oligopoly with the big three U.S. wireless tower market players. How does SBAC position itself among American Tower and Crown Castle? What are their distinct strategic paths?
That's an excellent and critical question, host, because their competitive positioning is really vital to understanding SBAC's niche and its strategy. Let's compare these industry giants briefly. Yep. First, you have American Tower, AMT. They're the largest of the three by nearly every measure, with something like over 224,000 communication sites globally.
Huge global footprint.
Massive. AMT is known for its vast, diversified global footprint with a significant presence in many emerging markets. This offers potentially longer growth runways, but it also exposes them to more foreign currency exchange risk and geopolitical risks.
Makes sense.
And notably, back in 2021, they made a strategic acquisition of CoreSite, which marked a significant entry into the U.S. data center market. So they're diversifying beyond just towers. Then there's Crown Castle, CCI. CCI stands out because its focus has historically been exclusively on the U.S. market.
U.S. only, okay.
And they pursued a unique multi-asset strategy. They have over 40,000 macro towers, sure, but historically they also invested heavily in fiber optic cable, something like 90,000 route miles and small cells.
So towers, fiber, and small cells.
Right. The idea was to offer comprehensive solutions for network densification. However, this strategy faced some investor scrutiny.
Why is that?
Mainly due to its higher capital intensity and, frankly, lower returns compared to their core tower business.
Yeah.
Fiber is expensive to deploy and maintain. This actually led to them announcing a strategic review and, more recently, a sale of their fiber segment to refocus squarely on their core macro tower business.
Interesting. So they're doubling down on towers now.
And finally, we have SBA Communications, SBAC, which I'd probably describe as the disciplined operator.
Disciplined operator. I like that.
It's the smallest of the big three, with just over 39,600 towers, primarily concentrated in the U.S., but with a more selective and opportunistic international presence, mainly in places like Brazil and South Africa. SBAC's strategy is singularly focused on the highly attractive economics of macro towers. That's their bread and butter. They've largely avoided those huge, large-scale, transformative M&A deals. They prefer a steady cadence of new tower builds and smaller, what they call tuck-in portfolio acquisitions.
Smaller deals.
Yeah, ones that meet their very strict financial criteria. They really stick to their knitting, focusing on what they know works best.
Okay, so if we look at some quick comparisons, just to help listeners grasp the scale and focus differences. SBAC, with about 17,500 U.S. towers, is clearly smaller domestically than American Tower's 42,000 or Crown Castle's 40,000.
Right.
Globally, American Tower dwarfs both with over 224,000 sites compared to SBAC's roughly 39,700. And market capitalization really highlights this difference. SBC is around $24 billion, while American Tower is nearly $100 billion.
Big difference in size.
Yeah. Expert, what's the strategic takeaway from these differences? It's not just about being bigger, is it?
Absolutely not, host. The aha here is that these distinct strategies aren't just internal decisions. They directly influence the competitive landscape for each other.
How so?
Well, take Crown Castle's recent decision to divest its fiber assets. They're becoming more of a pure-play U.S. tower company again. That will likely intensify competition for U.S. tower acquisitions, potentially driving up asset prices, which could impact SBAC's acquisition strategy.
Okay, more competition for deals.
Exactly. On the other hand, look at American Tower. Their immense global scale and their focus on integrating that big CoreSite data center business. Well, that could divert management, attention, and capital away from the core U.S. tower market, at least somewhat.
Creating an opening for SBAC.
Potentially, yes. It could, paradoxically, create opportunities for a focused operator like SBAC to strengthen its domestic position and carrier relationships without having to battle the absolute largest player as directly for every single deal or amendment. And while SBAC's smaller scale meant it maybe missed out on some of the massive carrier portfolio transactions a decade ago.
Right.
This relative size now offers a degree of agility. The company can pursue smaller acquisition targets that might be just immaterial to AMT or CCI.
Deals the big guys wouldn't bother with.
Exactly. Potentially securing them at more favorable valuations. Furthermore, just mathematically, from a smaller revenue base, each dollar of incremental leasing growth has a greater percentage impact. This provides a sort of mathematical advantage for achieving higher growth rates in key metrics like AFFO per share.
Interesting point.
So understanding SBAC's unique focus helps you see how it carves out its niche and actually leverages its size within this oligopoly, focusing on what it does best, disciplined tower operations.
Okay, we've painted a really clear picture of how SBAC operates, the business model, and the strategic moat around it. But as they say, the proof is in the pudding, or maybe in this case, the financials. How does this rock-solid business model translate into actual performance and, crucially for investors, shareholder returns?
That's absolutely where the stability and scalability we've been talking about truly shine through. Let's dive into the revenue and profitability trends. Total revenue has shown a pretty steady upward trajectory over the last few years. It grew from $2.31 billion in 2021 to $2.71 billion in 2023.
Solid growth.
And this growth, as we discussed earlier, is almost entirely attributable to that core site leasing segment. Its revenue climbed consistently from $2.1 billion in 2021 up to $2.52 billion in 2023. This consistent performance really underscores the recurring and predictable nature of its long-term lease contracts with those built-in escalators. Now, in stark contrast, remember the site development segment. Its revenue has been far more erratic.
Yeah, the more cyclical one.
Exactly. After a strong year in 2022, with revenues of $297 million, that segment saw a significant decline down to $195 million in 2023.
And that was because carriers pulled back spending.
Mostly, yes. Major carriers, particularly T-Mobile and maybe Dish, were moderating their capital spending after heavy buildouts. This volatility clearly highlights the strategic wisdom, I think, of focusing on the leasing business as the primary engine of value creation. A really key measure for tower REITs is organic, or same-tower revenue growth.
What does that show, exactly?
It strips out the impact of acquisitions and currency fluctuations to show the underlying performance of their existing assets. Are they getting more rent from the towers they already own?
Okay, makes sense.
And SB Baker's organic growth driven by new leases, those critical 5G lease amendments, and the contractual rent escalators showed positive momentum in both their domestic and international segments in 2023. That's a healthy sign. Now, when it comes to profitability and margins, the tower business, as we've touched on, is characterized by high scalability and strong operating leverage.
Meaning adding more tenants doesn't cost much extra.
Precisely. As SBAC adds tenants or amends leases on existing towers, the incremental revenue comes at a very, very low incremental cost. Mm. This naturally leads to margin expansion over time. For the full year 2023, SBAC's adjusted EBITDA margin was approximately 61.9%.
Over 60%. That's quite high.
It's very strong. It's a testament to their operational efficiency and the inherent profitability of this infrastructure business model. So consistent revenue from leasing combined with these high margins translates directly into robust underlying profitability.
Okay, so for a REIT, we know traditional net income isn't always the best way to evaluate performance because of depreciation. You mentioned AFO earlier. Can you elaborate on why adjusted funds from operations, or AFO, is really the true North Star for SBS and its investors? Why is it more meaningful than, say, net income?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. For REITs, traditional net income can be misleading because it includes these large non-cash depreciation charges associated with real estate assets. These charges reduce net income on paper, but they don't reflect actual cash leaving the company. AFO, however, essentially represents the recurring cash flow that's available for distribution to shareholders through dividends or for reinvestment back into the business.
So it's the actual cash generated.
It's the actual cash generated from operations. It's the purest measure of a REIT's operating performance and its ability to generate sustainable returns. Management's primary goal, therefore, is typically the long-term growth of AFO per share. And despite facing some headwinds like that T-Mobile Sprint merger churn we mentioned and some unfavorable foreign currency movements, SBAC has shown a really resilient ability to grow its bottom line cash flow per share. For example, in Q4 2023, the company delivered AFO per share of $3.37. That represented strong 8.0% growth year over year.
8% growth in cash flow per share. That's solid.
Very solid. And for the full year 2023, AFFO per share was $13.08. This consistent growth comes from a powerful combination of factors. Those contractual rent escalators kicking in, high margin lease amendments from 5G upgrades, and also the accretive impact of share buybacks, which reduce the number of shares outstanding, boosting the per share number. Now, looking at their payout ratio, that's a percentage of AFFO guide they pay out as dividends, SBSE maintains a pretty conservative dividend policy.
Meaning they don't pay out most of their cash flow.
Exactly. For 2024, their announced dividend represents less than 30% of its projected AFFO.
Less than 30%.
Yes. This low payout ratio is a significant strength and I think a key aha moment for investors looking for stability and growth potential. It means over 70% of the company's recurring cash flow is retained.
What do they do with all that retained cash?
They can strategically deploy it for several things. Deleveraging, paying down debt funding, accretive growth through new tower builds and acquisitions, or opportunistically repurchasing shares when they think the stock is cheap. All these actions contribute to future AFFO per share growth, and it gives them a significant margin of safety on the dividend itself.
Expert, just looking at the historical financials you provided, the table summarizing revenue, AFFO, etc., from 2021 through the 2024 outlook, what's the single most significant trend you really want listeners to take away from SBAC's revenue and AFFO story over these past few years?
I think the clearest takeaway is the incredible reliability and consistency of their site leasing revenue. You see it marching steadily upward year after year in the table. It's been the consistent growth engine, pushing total revenue from $2.31 billion in 2021 toward that $2.71 billion in 2023, with a stable outlook for 2024. That part of the business truly acts like an annuity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, contrast that starkly with the site development line. You see a jump up in 2022 to $297 million. Then, bam, it drops back to $195 million in 2023 as carrier spending pulled back.
Yeah, very volatile.
That dip perfectly illustrates why SBBC's strategic focus on long-term leasing is so smart. It's where the stability and predictability reside. And despite that development volatility, look at adjusted EBITDA and, crucially, AFFO per share. They've both grown consistently each year. That demonstrates the power of those high-margin leasing contracts and management's execution. And finally, that FO payout ratio staying consistently low, under 30% projected for 2024, is critical. It proves they're generating far more cash than they're paying out dividends, giving them immense financial flexibility for debt reduction, buybacks, and future growth. That's the core story. Okay, moving on now to the balance sheet and capital allocation. This is where we really see the company's prudent financial management in action. In a capital-intensive industry like wireless infrastructure, and especially for a REIT structure that often uses debt, a strong and prudently managed balance sheet is absolutely paramount. A really critical metric that investors watch closely for tower REITs is the net debt to annualized adjusted EBITDA ratio.
Okay, what does that tell you?
It basically tells you how leveraged the company is relative to its core earnings power. How many years of EBITDA would it take to pay off its net debt? At the end of 2023, SBAC's total debt was approximately $12.4 billion. Now, the company made a very strategic decision over the last year or so to allocate a significant portion of its discretionary cash flow towards retiring higher cost, particularly floating rate debt.
Paying down debt, basically.
Exactly. Proactive deleveraging. This resulted in their net debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio dropping to 6.3x at year-end 2023. The company noted this was its lowest leverage level in decades.
Lowest in decades. That's significant.
Very significant. This conservative financial posture enhances their resilience, it gives them more strategic optionality, and it allows the company to navigate macroeconomic uncertainty, like rising interest rates, from a real position of strength. So for you, the listener, a strong balance sheet means the company is less vulnerable to economic shocks and has more flexibility for growth opportunities when they arise.
That's a really significant point, especially now. With interest rates being a major concern for so many businesses, how does SBAC manage its specific debt profile to ensure financial stability? Do they have a lot of floating rate debt that's exposed to rate hikes?
That's a very perceptive question, host, and it's crucial. Regarding their debt profile, SBAC's debt is a mix of different instruments. They use revolving credit facilities for flexibility, term loans, secured tower revenue securities, and senior notes. Crucially, though, a significant portion of this total debt is fixed rate.
Ah, so locked in at lower rates.
Exactly. That insulates a large part of their interest expense from market fluctuations. And they don't just stop there. They also actively manage any remaining variable rate exposure through financial instruments called interest rate swaps.
What do those do?
They effectively convert variable rate debt payments into fixed rate payments, further reducing volatility in their interest costs. The company also consistently operates well within its debt covenants. These are rules set by lenders, like a maximum leverage ratio, which for them is around 6.5x. Their proactive deleveraging means they have a very comfortable cushion below that limit. This proactive debt management strategy significantly reduces interest rate risk and ensures financial stability. It's a real strategic advantage, especially in today's economic climate. Okay, finally, let's talk about shareholder returns and how they allocate capital. SBAC operates with a very clear and disciplined capital allocation framework. The primary goal is always maximizing long-term AFFO per share. Their priorities are ranked almost like a hierarchy. First, reinvest capital into high-quality assets. That means new tower builds or accretive acquisitions that meet their return hurdles. Growth first, if the returns are there. Second, opportunistic share repurchases, but only when they believe the stock is undervalued.
Buying back their own stock.
Right. And third, providing a growing cash dividend to shareholders. This clear framework means management is explicitly committed to returning value to shareholders through a combination of business growth and direct cash payouts.
And we can actually see that shift in their capital allocation priorities in the numbers. If we look at their capital deployment summary table, Back in 2021, they were deploying over $1.3 billion in growth capital, a lot of that driven by acquisitions. But by 2023, that figure dropped significantly to under $200 million for total growth CapEx, with acquisitions themselves down to just $81.6 million.
Shame.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we see a notable increase in share repurchases, $100 million used in 2023, and cash dividends paid grew steadily from $261 million in 2021 up to $370 million in 2023. What does this shift tell you about management's current strategy and thinking?
That's a keen observation, host, and it reveals quite a lot about their approach. This shift really reflects management's financial discipline and their adaptability to changing market conditions. When external acquisition opportunities are plentiful and attractively priced, like maybe they were perceived in 2021, they lean into M&A. But during periods of higher interest rates, which make deals more expensive to finance, or when there are fewer compelling targets available at the right price, they pivot.
They adjust their playbook.
Exactly. Their decision to allocate more capital towards debt reduction, which lowers leverage, and share repurchases demonstrates a commitment to fortifying the balance sheet and enhancing per-share metrics for existing shareholders, rather than maybe chasing growth at any cost or overpaying for assets. Their dividend policy and sustainability are also quite impressive. SBAC has aggressively grown its dividend since they initiated it. They just announced another 15% increase for Q1 2024.
15% increase.
Yeah, and that follows an average growth rate of nearly 20% annually over the past 3 years. This rapid growth, even amidst broader economic uncertainty, signals management's strong confidence in the long-term stability and growth of their cash flows. And as we keep saying, it's exceptionally well covered, with that payout ratio under 30% of 2024 AFFO guidance. That provides a huge margin of safety and leaves plenty of retained capital for future growth initiatives. And the share repurchase program is also a flexible and powerful tool in their kit. Management explicitly views it as a way to enhance shareholder value, especially when they perceive the stock is trading below its intrinsic worth.
Buying low, essentially.
Buying their own shares low, yes.
Yeah.
They recently got board approval for a new $1.5 billion buyback plan starting in Q1 2025, and they deployed $100 million into the previous plan in 2023. Buybacks work by reducing the total number of shares outstanding. This automatically increases the earnings per share, or AFFO per share, for the remaining shares, and increases the ownership percentage for existing holders.
Making each remaining share more valuable.
Correct. It's accretive to AFFO per share. Management often sees it as providing a sort of valuation floor for the stock, creating a natural source of demand during periods of market weakness. It offers shareholders a dual return mechanism alongside the growing dividend. It's really a sign of management's confidence in the company's underlying value and future prospects.
Okay, so if we connect all this back to the bigger picture, with all the strengths we've discussed, the strong business model, the solid financials, the disciplined capital allocation, what's SBAC's actual blueprint for navigating the future and continuing its growth trajectory? How does it plan to maximize the value of its existing assets and expand wisely in this constantly evolving digital landscape?
SBAC's growth strategy is a well-defined, multi-pronged approach, host. And importantly, it always prioritizes the most profitable and reliable sources of growth first. The most lucrative part comes from its organic growth engine, basically, increasing revenue from the towers they already own. Firstly, as we discussed, maximizing co-location. Remember that average of just 1.9 tenants per site?
Yeah, still room below the potential three or four tenants.
Exactly. SBAC has a significant long-term opportunity to add new, high-margin tenants to its existing infrastructure. Each new tenant comes at a very high incremental margin, typically over 90%, because the primary capital costs building the tower have already been incurred years ago. This represents substantial embedded growth potential. It's a true aha moment of leveraging an asset they already own and control. Secondly, within organic growth, is driving amendments to existing leases. This is huge right now.
The 5G upgrades again?
Precisely. In the current 5G investment cycle, the primary driver for domestic leasing activity isn't necessarily brand new towers, but rather these amendments on existing ones. As the major carriers continue to deploy their newly acquired mid-band spectrum, like that crucial C-band, they need to install new, often larger and heavier, antennas and radios on existing towers.
And each time they do that.
Each time they add or significantly modify equipment, it necessitates a lease amendment, which typically comes with an increase in the monthly rent paid to SBAC. This provides a steady stream of organic, high-margin revenue growth. So a big part of their near-term growth is simply built in, coming from making more efficient and expanded use of the infrastructure they already have in place.
Okay, so maximizing the existing portfolio is key. But beyond just making more money from the towers they already have, how does SBAC plan to expand its actual physical footprint? What's their approach to building new towers or acquiring more in such a competitive market?
That's where the portfolio expansion piece comes in, and it's always executed with that characteristic discipline we talked about. They have an active new tower construction program both in the U.S. and internationally. This is largely demand-driven. They focus heavily on build-to-suit towers.
Meaning they have a tenant lined up before they build.
Often, yes. A long-term lease is secured from at least one anchor tenant even before construction begins, which significantly de-risks the investment. They also leverage their deep market knowledge, including the intelligence gathered from their site development segment, to build towers in strategic locations where they anticipate strong future multi-carrier demand. This allows them to create new, high-quality assets positioned for growth. Their acquisition strategy is also a key component of expansion, but again, it's executed with very strict financial discipline. SBAC continuously evaluates opportunities to acquire existing towers and smaller portfolios from other owners. But they only pull the trigger if these opportunities meet their stringent internal guidelines for risk-adjusted returns on invested capital.
So they won't overpay just to get bigger.
Exactly. This ensures that growth is always accretive to shareholder value in the long run, preventing them from making expensive mistakes just for the sake of scale. Now, regarding their international focus, SBAC selectively targets specific markets, primarily in Latin America and Africa.
Why those regions?
Because these markets generally exhibit less mature wireless networks compared to the U.S., they often have lower smartphone and data penetration rates, and a growing middle class demanding improved network quality and coverage. This provides potentially a longer runway for growth than the more saturated U.S. market. However, this is a very calculated trade-off.
More growth potential, but more risk.
Precisely. While offering higher growth potential, these emerging markets also introduce greater macroeconomic and geopolitical risks. Things like currency devaluation, a big one, political instability, and unpredictable regulatory changes. But they actively manage this risk. A clear example is their calculated exit from Argentina a few years ago when market conditions deteriorated significantly. It shows they're disciplined and not afraid to cut their losses when the risk-reward profile changes unfavorably.
That's good to hear.
So yes, growth isn't haphazard. It's a careful balancing act between pursuing expansion opportunities and prudently managing the associated risks.
It's definitely good to see them thinking long-term and prudently balancing that growth with risk. But are they also looking beyond just the traditional macro tower business? Are they exploring, you know, emerging technologies or adjacent areas?
They are, host, but it's important to frame this correctly. They are exploring beyond the tower in adjacencies, but it's crucial for listeners to understand these are currently more defensive and exploratory in nature. They are not the core drivers of the current investment thesis or where the bulk of the capital is going.
So more like side bets for now.
Kind of, yeah. For example, they offer connectivity solutions like DAS, distributed antenna systems, and small cells. These are often used to improve coverage and capacity in high-traffic venues like stadiums, airports, or dense urban cores, where macro towers might not be the most efficient solution. They also have their SBA Edge initiative, which we touched on briefly. This is about developing small, modular edge data centers located right at their tower bases.
For that low-latency computing?
Exactly. To host computing and storage resources closer to end users, which is essential for latency-sensitive 5G applications like AR/VR or autonomous systems. And they're also exploring things like private networks for enterprise customers or public safety agencies, and even energy-as-a-service solutions, initially focused on powering their own sites more efficiently and potentially offering services to tenants later.
So keeping an eye on the future.
Definitely. However, and this is the key takeaway, their primary strategic focus and their capital allocation priority remain firmly on the core macro tower leasing business. That's where the value is generated today. While these adjacent areas are interesting and show a smart eye towards future-proofing their business and potentially creating new revenue streams down the line, they aren't the main drivers of SBAC's current investment thesis.
Okay, that makes sense, but this raises an important question. No investment, no matter how strong the business model seems, is completely without risks. We've talked a lot about the economic fortress, but what are the potential pitfalls? What are the chinks in the armor, so to speak, that could impact SBA's performance?
That's a vital consideration, host, and it's critical for any informed investor to understand the risks involved. Let's try to categorize the key risks for SBC. First, let's look at operational risks. A big one is customer concentration.
Relying heavily on a few big carriers.
Exactly. A substantial portion of SBC's revenue comes from just a few major U.S. carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile primarily. Decisions made by these key tenants, like their network spending levels, their technology choices, or merger activity, have an outsized impact on SBAC's results. It's a double-edged sword. They're stable, reliable customers, but SBAC is quite sensitive to their strategic moves. Linked to that is carrier M&A and churn. This is probably the most significant near-term headwind for SBAC right now.
The T-Mobile-Sprint merger aftermath?
Precisely. There's elevated churn, meaning lease cancellations, resulting from T-Mobile rationalizing the combined network and decommissioning redundant Sprint cell sites. This is a known and quantifiable risk. Management has actually guided that this churn will represent an aggregate of about $125 million to $150 million in lost revenue spread out from 2024 through 2028.
So they know it's coming.
They know it's coming, and the market knows it's coming. The key question for investors is whether new 5G leasing activity will be sufficient to fully offset this known churn over that period. The risk of future major carrier consolidation also remains a long-term concern, as fewer national carriers generally mean fewer potential tenants overall for the tower industry. And finally, under operational risks, we have those international risks. While pursuing growth abroad is attractive, their operations in Latin America and Africa expose SBAC to potential geopolitical instability, unpredictable regulatory changes, and, maybe most significantly, foreign currency, FX, fluctuations.
How does FX risk work?
If the U.S. dollar strengthens significantly against currencies like the Brazilian real or the South African rand, the revenues and profits earned in those countries translate back into fewer U.S. dollars when SBAC reports its consolidated financials. This could create headwinds for reported growth, even if the underlying business and local currency is doing well. Okay, moving on to financial and macroeconomic risks. As a REIT that uses debt financing, SBC's financial results are inherently sensitive to interest rate changes.
We talked about how they manage it, but it's still a risk.
It's absolutely still a risk. A sustained period of significantly higher interest rates increases the cost of refinancing existing debt as it matures, and it makes new debt for acquisitions or development more expensive. This can put pressure on AFFO per share growth. However, as we discussed, SBAC actively mitigates this risk through having a high proportion of fixed-rate debt already locked in using those interest rate swaps and their recent proactive deleveraging, which has brought their leverage down to multi-decade lows, giving them more cushion. Furthermore, a severe economic downturn could theoretically cause carriers to pull back on capital spending, which would slow down leasing activity. However, wireless connectivity is increasingly viewed by consumers and businesses as a non-discretionary utility, almost like electricity or water.
People won't give up their phone service easily.
Exactly. This provides a degree of resilience for the tower industry, even in a broader recession. So while interest rates and the economy are risks, SBAC seems well-positioned to manage them. And lastly, there are some long-term thematic and technological risks to consider. The rapid deployment of low-Earth orbit, LEO, satellite constellations, most notably SpaceX's Starlink, has emerged as a potential long-term disruptive threat. There's talk of direct sat-to-cell technology connecting standard phones to satellites.
Could satellites replace towers?
It's a question many people ask. However, for SBAC's core business, this risk appears overstated, at least for the foreseeable future. The key aha here is understanding the physics and economics. Satellites are generally best suited for providing basic coverage in remote, rural, or underserved areas where building towers is uneconomical. Towers, on the other hand, are absolutely essential for providing capacity handling the massive amounts of data traffic generated by millions of users simultaneously in dense suburban and urban areas where most people live and work.
So different use cases.
Largely, yes. They are arguably more complementary than directly competitive for the bulk of wireless traffic today. Satellites might handle basic texting or voice in the wilderness, but they can't handle thousands of people streaming video in a city block like towers can. That said, direct sat-to-cell technology definitely warrants long-term monitoring, especially for lower bandwidth services or specific niche applications. And then there's the general risk of technological obsolescence. Could some fundamentally new technology emerge that makes towers irrelevant?
Seems unlikely anytime soon.
It's always a theoretical risk in tech, but a wholesale replacement of the existing deeply embedded terrestrial tower infrastructure seems highly unlikely in the next decade, or probably longer. just given its immense cost, its proven reliability, and the fundamental physics of efficiently delivering high-capacity wireless signals over land. Understanding these long-term dynamics helps you assess the true competitive landscape and the durability of SBAC's assets.
Okay, expert, this has been incredibly thorough. So after diving deep into SBS business model, its robust finances, its growth strategy, and the potential risks, let's bring it all together for the investment decision. What does the valuation actually tell us? Is SBAC, based on its current stock price, a good bet for investors right now?
All right, let's look at the relative valuation analysis. When valuing tower REITs, we focus primarily on cash flow-based multiples, as traditional PE ratios aren't as meaningful due to depreciation. The most critical metric, as we've discussed, is price to AFFO, PAFO. Based on forward estimates for 2024 ASE, SBAC currently trades at approximately 17.1 times.
Okay, 17.1x, how does that compare?
Well, it represents a premium compared to the broader REIT sector median, which is hovering around maybe 14.7x.
Oh, the premium.
You could argue it's justified by SBCs and the tower sectors generally, superior long-term growth prospects, the exceptional operating leverage we talked about, and the truly mission-critical nature of wireless infrastructure in today's economy. These aren't just average buildings, they're essential utilities. Another useful metric, especially for comparing companies with different debt levels, is enterprise value to EBITDA. EBITDA's enterprise value includes debt. SBC's last 12 months LTM EBITDA is approximately 21.3x.
And how does that stack up against its peers?
It's largely in line with its closest and largest peer, American Tower, which is around 22.1x. Interestingly, it's at a noticeable premium to Crown Castle, which is trading closer to 18.8x.
Why is Crown Castle lower?
That lower multiple for CCI likely reflects the market's reaction to the challenges and lower returns associated with its now divested fiber business, and perhaps some uncertainty around their recent strategic shift and activist involvement. But here's a crucial point, maybe the key aha on valuation. SBC's current EBITDA multiple of around 21x is trading significantly below its own five-year historical average. While comparing PE isn't perfect as a proxy, their average PE over the last 5 years was closer to 80x during peak growth expectations.
Wow, 80x down to 21x on EBITDA. Big compression.
Huge compression. This suggests that the stock is relatively inexpensive compared to its recent past. It indicates that much of the near-term headwinds we discussed, like the Sprint churn, might already be priced into the current stock level by the market.
So these metrics help determine if the stock's price reflects its true value and growth potential, considering the current environment.
Exactly. They provide context for whether it looks cheap, fair, or expensive relative to peers and its own history.
Expert, let's quickly crystallize the most important takeaways from these valuation metrics you just walked through. When you look at SBC ratio or EBITDA compared to its peers, its own history, and even its dividend yield, what's the single most compelling insight for potential investors right now?
I think the single most compelling insight is that SBAC, despite being a demonstrably high-quality infrastructure asset with incredibly reliable, escalating cash flows and strong secular growth tailwinds, it's currently trading at a significantly compressed valuation compared to its own recent historical averages. It's also trading at a reasonable premium to the broader REIT sector, which seems justified, and roughly in line with its main peer, AMT, while being more expensive than CCI, likely for good reasons related to CCI's recent issues. Now, you look at the dividend yield, which is around 2.0%. That is lower than its peers AMT, around 3.1%, and CCI, around 5.6%.
Why is SBC's yield lower?
It's largely a direct result of that conservative payout ratio we emphasize, paying out less than 30% of AFFO. This isn't necessarily a negative. It means they retain significant cash flow for deleveraging, share buybacks, and reinvestment, all of which drive future AFFO per share growth rather than maximizing the current yield today. So the overall picture is of a quality asset available at a much more attractive price point than investors have seen in recent memory, with a focus on total return rather than just current income. And beyond just looking at these relative multiples, we can also consider the analyst consensus and price targets. What does Wall Street think? The general consensus among analysts who cover SBAC is quite constructive. Most ratings fall into the moderate buy or buy category. The average 12-month price target from these analysts is hovering somewhere around $258 to $260 per share.
Okay, and where's the stock trading now? Around $225, $230?
Somewhere in that ballpark, yes. So that average target implies a potential upside of 16% or perhaps more from current levels just to reach the average analyst expectation. And some of the higher-end analyst targets actually reach up towards $285, which would suggest over 27% potential return. Furthermore, intrinsic valuation models, like a discounted cash flow DCF analysis, which tries to estimate the present value of all future cash flows, also tend to indicate that the stock is undervalued currently. One published model I saw calculated a fair value of approximately $282 per share.
So both relative and intrinsic measures suggest potential upside.
Exactly. It shows a degree of confidence from a broad range of market experts in the company's future value proposition at these levels.
Okay, so bringing it all together now. After this comprehensive deep dive, what's the final word? Is SBAC a compelling long-term investment opportunity based on everything we've discussed?
Based on the comprehensive analysis, Host, I believe the conclusion points towards a clear positive investment thesis. SBAC is, fundamentally, a premier operator of absolutely essential infrastructure. It sits right at the heart of the modern digital economy. Its core business model is exceptionally durable, characterized by those long-term escalating contracts that generate predictable, high-margin cash flows. This provides an incredibly stable foundation. Critically, it is poised to continue benefiting from powerful and enduring secular tailwinds, namely, the multi-year 5G network investment cycle and the simply unabating global demand for more mobile data. These trends together ensure continued growing demand for its tower space. Now, we absolutely acknowledge the company faces legitimate near-term headwinds, primarily from that T-Mobile Sprint network rationalization churn and perhaps a temporary lull in the absolute peak of carrier spending. However, these challenges appear to be well understood by the market, they're quantifiable, and they seem adequately reflected, if not more than reflected, in the stock's current compressed valuation. Importantly, the company's strategic response has been textbook. A clear focus on financial discipline, proactive deleveraging to strengthen the balance sheet, and a robust capital return program that intelligently balances growing dividends with opportunistic share buybacks. This positions SBAC to navigate this period from a position of significant strength. And it's worth noting, the recent CEO transition was to a long-tenured internal leader, which ensures strategic continuity and a continued focus on that prudent, value-accretive capital allocation approach. As we discussed, the stock's valuation is significantly compressed from its pandemic-era highs and now appears quite reasonable, trading largely in line with its primary peer, AMT, and well below its own historical averages on key metrics like PAFO and EBITDA. The combination of a secure and rapidly growing dividend supported by that low payout ratio, an opportunistic share repurchase program providing valuation support and enhancing per-share results, and the clear potential for a re-acceleration in organic growth as 5G deployments continue to mature. All of this creates, I believe, a compelling total return profile for long-term investors. Therefore, weighing the durable business model, the growth drivers, the disciplined management, the strengths and balance sheet, and the current valuation, the final recommendation is a buy for SBA Communications Corp, SBAC, with a 12-month price target of $258.
And that concludes our really comprehensive deep dive into SBA Communications Corp. We've explored SBAC's absolutely crucial role as an infrastructure provider, silently powering our increasingly connected world, something maybe you hadn't thought much about before. We certainly hope this deep dive has illuminated the resilience, the powerful growth drivers, and the disciplined strategy behind this critical business. Hopefully, it's given you a fresh perspective on the unseen physical backbone of our digital lives. Now, before we go, consider this provocative thought. As our reliance on mobile data continues to just explode, think about everything from the simple act of scrolling social media feeds to the incredibly complex future of autonomous vehicles, the metaverse, virtual reality companies like SBAC aren't just abstract investment opportunities. They are, in a very real sense, the unseen architects of our evolving daily lives. They are building the very pathways our digital future will run on. What does this profound, seemingly ever-growing dependence mean for how we perceive and perhaps how we should value the physical backbone of our digital world? And just try to imagine what that demand for data for connectivity might look like a decade from now. How much more will we collectively be willing to pay for that seamless, always-on connection that we increasingly take for granted? We encourage you, our listener, to reflect on these implications both for your own digital consumption habits and perhaps for your potential investment strategies. Keep an eye on these essential foundational companies that are quietly building our future. Thank you so much for joining us on the Deep Dive. We'll be back soon with another exploration of the knowledge that matters most to you.